Good evening, everyone. I'm going to call the September 2011 meeting of the Mahata Rise Advisory Council to order. And our first order of business is public comment. Is there anyone from the public who wants to make comments? No? Okay. And we'll move on to approval of the agenda, which you see has one deletion from what we received. If there are no objections, we'll consider the agenda approved. Okay, approved. And since we're moving at a quick pace, our guest speaker isn't here yet. So we'll move on to item number six, which is reports from the committees. And the Public Safety Committee, headed by Victoria and Joseph, had a lot of work this month to report on. So I'll turn it over to them.
I sent out an email 15 weeks ago to the agenda for the meeting. Just wrote that the police agreed to agenda, obviously didn't hear.
Pick up a line.
You can't hear me, though. Sorry. I sent out an email 15 weeks ago to the agenda for the public meeting. John confirmed that MP, he was part of the agenda, I'll send down again to confirm. At this point, we're thinking of voting the meeting on the 21st instead of, is that confirmed now?
That's not confirmed, but I think that should be, I mean.
Okay. Instead of the 14th, so we'll have time to advertise. Metro will advertise in a normal manner. And I think that's it. Do you have anything to add, Joseph?
No, not really. I think that, just to reiterate, we're hoping to have this conversation centered around public safety in general, but more narrowly focused on going back to school, public safety concerns, young people, and things like that. So just very difficult for me to administer that, like, how to move that people. But so that's progress set up around the 21st. Which John thinks should be fine. The other option is that the 28th, but we don't want to go that far. So it'll probably be around the 21st. We would appreciate it if any RAC members will make an effort to be at the meeting. There's going to be a presentation from Victoria.
Transit police.
Yeah, we're going to do a RAC.
Well, the RAC will do a brief intro and introduction.
Yeah. And so it's just going to be like a whole program. We're going to try to keep the conversation focused on issues and solutions as opposed to just issues. And so hopefully this will be a part, something that we can take some positive out of and not just, let's just complain about what we don't like to work about.
I have one more thing. John, did Tabitha approve, did he agree to add something about Metro access?
You know what? I didn't ask him specifically about that. I'll follow up with him specifically about that. He said everything looked fine to him, but I'll ask.
We want to make sure we talked about the differences in policing, the train versus the bus versus Metro access.
And Catherine talked about the bus. Like, if you want to talk about the bus, what you think, especially like if you hear or not lately about the safety issues around the bus and everything like that. Especially if you ride the bus and have experience like this. There are actually a few bad things, but they sent a representative to our last meeting that actually talked about a lot of things that the transit police actually does do. Like, they do targeted enforcement and where they have groups of undercover agents by specific lines all day and things like that. And so you'll be able to learn a lot more about what the police actually do, but also push back or offer ideas for where they actually, where you believe they actually should be and more of a presence should be. So I think that's all. Victoria has done the notice job on this, so she has like a whole report on how this should be, how the school would actually run, and then I just come to meetings.
Just one question. So the only person that's coming is the Metro Police, representing Metro Police. We're not going to be discussing anything in addition, but you just mentioned earlier, addition to public safety, there are other issues besides, but we're just targeting the issue of the young people and violence in the contract. So that's the only thing that we're targeting.
What was your general issue of the residential case? I'm sorry, I forget, I don't have to get the right one. But the goal of it is to come out, you actually, you were in the building there. So we could, we'll take those other things that we do right now.
But do you feel like we're measuring something? That thing might, you feel like we're measuring something?
Well, no, because in addition to safety, personal safety, there's the safety of, in the trains, when things are broken down, when, or buses, when.
Yeah.
But, you know, things are broken down, the doors that don't open properly, or, you know, the fumbling of the crowd.
Oh, this is not that kind of thing.
That's what, but originally, we had discussed all the different issues, and then it had been decided that it's just going to be discussing, with medical police.
Right.
Maybe we can do that.
Deborah and Karen?
No, we could, we cover the students, well, we can,
I believe we mentioned it at the committee meeting, but John, can you bring that up too?
On which?
Safety for students who are moving here.
Okay.
That's what you meant, right? Okay.
Okay, Karen?
I'm sorry, I'm just being drawn down. So it's the Metropolitan Police as well as the Metropolitan Police?
No, only Sharon.
Metropolitan Police. This will not have any person on its staff, either Metropolitan Police or in some other category, or some other organization, that is a liaison to schools.
They have a daily conference call, I believe, will just be me?
They have liaison to schools.
They have this, like, daily conflict, because they have to call that all of, like, our area police, she's like the Metropolitan Police on the call, the school district police are on the call. And so that's the way that the families interact with them. But I don't know necessarily that they have, we have to talk to them about necessarily having liaison to the chancellor's office. But they do talk to the school district's police. And that's something that, that's what we ask to be a part of their presentation, is their work with, I guess, municipalities and other outside agencies. And so that's what they should be talking about. We have to do a presentation about it.
Carol, to answer your question, we do have somebody, there is somebody in Metro Transit Police that does act as a liaison to DCPS. Whether or not that will be the person there, I'm not sure. But I will bring that up with MTPD. I don't know who they're sending.
Thank you. Okay, if there are no other questions, thank Joseph and Victoria for their planning, and doing a great job on this. And I would also suggest that when we get the confirmation of the 21st, you know, in addition to the publicity that Metro will be doing, that we will contact our own personal networks and associations and organizations to inform them of the forum. Okay, next item, we now have the director of the Office of Bus Planning of Metro, and he is no stranger to the RAT, Jim Cameron. He's going to give us a presentation on service considerations that are coming up before the board shortly. So welcome, Mr. Cameron. Welcome back.
Well, good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to be back to visit with you. I have the privilege of sharing with you a presentation. We have talked at length for a number of years now about what we can do to improve the reliability and on-time performance of our service. And you is always kind of hard against the financial constraints of tight budgets and existence of fare increases and all of those other issues. Well, we have, we'll be making this presentation tomorrow to obtain the committee approval, recommended the board to take items to public hearing to allow us to add and subtract services as part of a balanced program to respond to some of the higher priority performance issues that we have within the bus system. And that's the essence of our presentation. You can go to the next slide. As you all know, Washington is consistently one of the most congested traffic areas in the nation, owing to the density of the center city, owing to the unique street layout, owing to a lot of travel and successful economy. So these are not necessarily bad issues to have, but we do have to find solutions. And as we deal with a lot of the economic development projects, the convention center, the former convention center, that large construction project is one example where a lane was taken off of Main Street to allow supporting the construction work. Well, when you take away a third of the capacity of the street that's serving some of our higher ridership routes, obviously congestion happens. And so we have to be able to adjust and respond to projects like that. The growth in congestion has been pretty consistent, about 1% a year for as long as I can remember. And it's anticipated to continue to grow for the foreseeable future. As work locations change, neighborhoods change, street patterns are altered, we must be able to adjust our bus services to respond accordingly. And so working with available resources, we want to maximize, optimize the use of those resources to serve the most people with the highest quality service possible. And that begets this recommendation on the next slide, where we have looked at our services, utilizing the different criteria, and these are the five formal ones. There's another 25 different ways that we look at services to identify performance and to respond to issues. We've come up with a plan to try and respond. In the next slide, addresses these objectives. First, trying to add trips where crowding is an issue. We do have some pretty positive stories out there. To the specifics, but the transit experience isn't uniform across the region. There's some that are in a growth mode and some that are in a reduction mode, and we need to be able to respond to that. Running times, which is the speed with which the bus is able to go down the street and the time it takes to go between time points, need to be adjusted in order to respond to being late or being held up. We need to add some trips to extend service later in the evening in some places and reduce some in others. We've had requests for Saturday and Sunday service in particular areas, and also want to restructure routes to make them less circuitous, to make them more efficient, to respond to rider suggestions and to construction projects. So, perpetually traffic backups. Moving on. This plan removes specific early and late trips, expands headways on some routes, widens just a little bit, not to create excessive traffic, but to allow for one fewer bus, which allows that bus to go someplace to solve the problem. Eliminate trips or sections of routes where other viable bus services are available, and to terminate some routes that are not meeting the criteria or that can be consolidated with other services. And in the next slide, the anticipated results is to not increase the total operating budget. We recognize all of the jurisdictions accept their funding for this year, so we'll be looking at that, but not require additional buses because we have not opened the new bus garage. We have no place to park it. We have not had funding to buy additional buses to respond to the growing demands, and so we have to use the fleet we have. We do want to increase ridership by taking service from a low productive route and moving it to a higher productive route. That should increase ridership more than it decreases, and it should increase our revenue and our cost recovery ratio, both of which are good when looking forward to next year's budget, when inevitably there will be funding constraints and expense growth. We do also want to maintain or improve the overall on-time performance, and that really is one of the key factors in satisfying customers and improving the overall experience of usability of the service. Moving on, I hope you all have this on a piece of paper so you can actually read it, but this is a summary of the district proposed changes, and it's presented in the regional routes, regional service on the top, and then the bottom 1, 2, 3, 4 are non-regional services. And I'll just identify the routes and we can respond to specific questions later on, but trying to respond to ridership growth on 42 and 43. The B2 was a recommendation from service study that we had done last year, where we found nearly across the board there was inadequate time for buses to get from end to end, and we need to respond to that. The D1, we find that we could go from 5 trips an hour to 4 trips an hour and have enough service and still be convenient for folks up in Glover Park. The D6 is a perpetual issue of on-time performance, but interestingly, we continue to see ridership growth on it, particularly now that some of the construction projects that are going through are finished. We would like to improve that way and make it more convenient, provide more service. The G8 has some running time issues. We have a plan for the service on Connecticut Avenue that could make it a little less complicated and give folks the ability to travel downtown a little bit quicker and not get caught up so much in the Highest Avenue Morgan traffic. Let's see what that next one is. N6. Thank you. That's sort of following up on some recommendations that came out of looking at the NA route and widening some of the headway allows us to save a bus that we can use to solve the problems up on the 42, for example. The U2, we have been getting strong advocacy from the folks in Ward 7, including members of this committee, about enhancements to service east of the river. And one of the things that it became obvious it has a strong demand is the U2, which runs on Minnesota Avenue and ties Ward 7 and Ward 8 together and provides circulation within the community. Needs weekend service and needs improved weekend service. In the non-regional category, the M8M9 is extended to an additional shopping center to provide better connectivity. The P126, which is alignment the main line runs from Eckington down to Anacostia, and there's a rush hour diversion that goes over toward Bogdan, and the ridership on that's very light, and we would like to just consolidate it to one regular service pattern. And the U5 and 6 need some additional running time. One of the ongoing discussions, when the railroad extended the weekend service, starting that Saturday night service and ending at midnight to ending at 3:30 in the morning, there were also 20 lines where extra trips were operated, added to run until 3:30 in the morning. We have 8 lines in the city that run essentially 24 hours a day. And so on Friday and Saturday night, we have an additional 20 lines that continue to run late into the evening. And those trips have been very poorly utilized. It does add a great deal of expense for the return on revenue and creates risk and exposure that our buses really don't need. And so we're proposing to eliminate those trips. So it's not really things that would operate beyond what our normal Monday through Thursday service plan is. So that's a quick summary of the district changes. In Maryland, we have a proposal that actually came out of a public hearing recommendation up in Prince George's. I don't think it was the last public hearing. It might have been the one before, and also related to plans we had developed for Greenville, which allowed a reroute of the C8 to get to the archives too. We provide an additional way for folks to get in and out of that important work site. The D12, 13, 14 was a study that we did last fall, and the D12, I think, has been running in the 60% on time performance. It's worse than South Prince George's, and we very much need to invest additional running time and improving the surface area. The F4, F6, which runs from New Carrollton to North Silver Spring, is notorious for its bunching, its crowding, its gaps, and its generally poor on time performance. We are trying to, in combination with several other actions, focus service on the F4, which has the highest share of ridership, and redirect the F6 to make better use of that route and work to improve connections within Hyattsville. The R125 is sort of I'll describe it as an oddly shaped route with a very redundant travel pattern where the R2 bus comes down, goes over to Prince George's, comes back, goes down Fort Totten, and there's just a lot of duplication of that travel time, travel patterns, and so by restructuring the 1-2 and getting rid of the 5, we're able to make it a little easier to explain, continue to provide the capacity and the connections, but do so at a lower cost. And then the R3, which is lower down on the page because it's a non-regional service, as part of that restructuring, would be eliminated, and the reroute of the F6 and the reroute of the R2 would cover that service area. So folks would lose service, they would just have different service and different routing. And so it all sort of ties together there in the Hyattsville area. Similarly, we would be reducing those late night, Friday and Saturday services, I should say early morning, Sunday, and Saturday and Sunday services. Then on the Central Avenue service, There's a couple of trips on the C-22 that have very poor ridership, and that allows us to move the service up to minutes and hours up to respond to the other issues. And then on the 89, as a result of the service evaluation study we've just been completing on the Laurel services, it was recommended that we to increase the frequency of service on the 89 because there are instances of crowding, and that's one of the success routes in that quarter. Then moving on to Virginia, we also have.
Sorry. My own page.
The 1F has a round trip on Friday night and operates later than its normal Monday to Thursday schedule. You're lucky to find one person sometimes on a really hot party night. You might find three people on that trip. So you'd like to eliminate that. The 3T, part of the Fairfax County Transit Development Plan, recommended the elimination of weekend service and eventually the elimination of that route in favor of some restructuring of services when the Metro Rail line comes into Tysons. So this would be step one toward that ultimate plan, and would allow the freeing up of some resources to be able to solve running time problems on the 23 line. This is one of the backbone routes in Northern Virginia. It runs from Crystal City through Shirlington, Boston, McLean, terminates at Tysons Corner Center. And it has wide variation in runtime, allows for traffic and crowding conditions that are not necessarily predictable, and so it would be able to increase the running time and make it more reliable. The 25A, we're proposing a reroute in response to some very strong advocacy from citizens in Mark Fairfax Park and Alexandria to essentially take that bus out of Shirlington, where there are several other alternative services, the 7s and the 22s, and re-establish a pathway that had previously existed that allowed folks in Park Fairfax to shop at the Bradley Shopping Center and have connections directly to Northern Virginia Community College. And then lastly, there's a recommendation on the 28X. This is the Leesburg Pipeline. Runs from Tysons Corner all the way into King Street. We have a limited stop service that was introduced a couple of years ago as part of our prior to Corner program, and it has been attracting riders. And in addition to that, the Defense Department, who is opening the Mark Center building, the Washington Headquarters Service at the Mark Center development in Alexandria, has offered to pay us to extend that route to Wilmer's Mark Center to provide connectivity between West Falls Church Metro and the whole Leesburg Pike Corridor, including Falls Church and Seven Corners, Skyline Babies Crossroads, into Mark Center. And so this is an opportunity for a public-public partnership. Money we were going to spend added to their money to get better service. And the bottom line is that we add as much as we take away, so it's revenue neutral, cost neutral, should increase ridership slightly, and improve performance and customer experience, at least on a small portion of our service. The total puts and takes add up, adds up to a little more than $4 million, which represents something less than 1% of the metro bus system cost. So you can see a drop, relatively modest, but we think it's extremely important that we establish this principle of managing the service outside of the budget process. We'll probably have public hearings and service discussions next spring, as we always do. It's a rite of passage from late into early spring. There's just some good business practices, and that's what we're going to mention. So, in the last slide here, the steps are, this is the traditional process, and the public hearings are required. You take a recommendation to a committee, they recommend it to the board, who authorizes us to hold a public hearing. We have 2 weeks of public notice. We hold the hearings. I'm proposing to have one hearing in Northwest DC, one in Southeast, one in Prince George's Plaza area of Prince George's, and we're trying for something along Leesburg Pike in the Falls Church or Fort Tyson's area of Northwest Hemp. That would take place the week of October 10th, and then we'll be back to. And then the board changes their meeting schedule, so we'll present a staff report to the committee on the 19th of October, when the committee will make the recommendation for the board to take action in November. And then when they do, some of the non-public hearing items will be implemented in December, some will trail over into March, and everything would be implemented by the end of June of next year. And so, for that, I would be happy to answer any questions as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Andrew, for the floor in the room. The room I have changed, so you want to question your comments. You're actually excited.
Well, a hearing is required. Well, the way that proceeds. A hearing is required for a major service change. A major service change is defined as reducing the span of service by more than an hour. That's the start to end time. Impacting more than 10% of the riders on the line. Reducing the length of the line by 20% or more, and changing the amount of service on the line by giving the trip triggers 10%, as measured by the total number of revenue miles, which is the distance run by the buses when they're actually available for carrying people. We've got four criteria. And everything else is a considered a minor change, and by board policy is able to be implemented at the discretion of the general manager. Any fare increase and any would also require the board to approve.
Just a quick procedural question. Who's this committee that has to approve in public hearing?
The board has several committees, topic specific,
and the customer care board.
Yeah, customer service, operations, and safety committee, CSOS, is the committee that has jurisdiction for non-budget service changes. In the spring, we would go to the finance advisory committee, and the finance administration committee, the FAC, because they would be generating a budget-related service adjustment. And so we actually have two different pathways. I think we can, the board has six different subcommittees.
I actually don't really have any problems with what you want to do. I think more of what I'm a little concerned that if John can forward you a longer email from council member who's not here, who can, but I'm actually about to say, and basically it's about your next steps and your hearings for the week of the 10th. And so here you can say hearings for the week of the 10th, and they're not really specific in where the hearings will be, even though you just verbally told us, but they're not really here, they're not really written in where they will be and when they will occur, and which breeds, this by putting this hearing in this location, this change affects this group, that's why this hearing is here. And so we can make sure, we can be assured or empowered to understand that these communities who are affected are able to actually have a hearing in the location that the petition would naturally be. And so I was told that you would think that through, and well, not necessarily make it through, but I think you have the need to confirm the code. So if you can make that more specific and more detailed in your recommendation to the board, but also if you can actually send that to us too and say, this meeting in this area because these groups in particular. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and I did very much think about the geographic locations, and that's why we're trying to be in that Hyattsville area, because that's where most of the impact is. That's why we're trying to be along Connecticut Avenue, and that's why we're trying to be in Southeast, that's why we're trying to make sure we're out in that Tyson's area, as opposed to using the 3T and be able to see to it. One of the challenges is I can't go commit to locations and specific dates until the board approves and directs that there will be a public hearing. So as soon as they get settled in, we'll be happy to share that and promote it wider. We will, in fact, the internet community has already started to talk about this, so we expect there to be a healthy dialogue.
When you say add runtime, do you mean more buses or on the route?
Sometimes, like for example, if a route takes 50 minutes to travel from end to end, but in reality, if it's scheduled for 50 minutes, but in reality it's taking 60 minutes, I could simply add 10 minutes to the schedule, and so then the bus would run on a 70-minute headway instead of a 60-minute headway, time between buses. Or, alternatively, I could add another bus so that we could maintain the same frequency of service, but allow buses longer to travel from end to end before they have to turn around and go back. And so, the answer depends on the line and how much what we call layover or cushion time at the end of the run is available as to whether it takes another bus.
Yes. All right.
Yes, my question specifically is related to what you said. Like for example, like the 23 lines. Those two guys, there's no way that bus, every time I take in the bus, it takes over an hour. Period. I don't know.
Yeah, I think from Crystal City to Tyson's, it's about 90 minutes in rush hour, and Saturday morning at midnight, you know, in the early morning, I think the little shortest is about 65 minutes.
So that was my concern, since it's such a long route. I don't know if would be easier just maybe to turn or create different routes so that service is one area or the other. Because honestly, that route, by the time I get there, I'm sick. You know what I mean? After years. And it makes a lot of turns and what have you.
It's a beautiful ride. Way out in the country, beautiful trees,
and not in rush hour,
trust me. When you go slow enough, you can actually see people off the giant
train.
Now, it's in the meet up around the corner.
Now, when you add running time, you're just basically adjusting the schedule so that it, you know, reads appropriately, because there's, you know, the constructions around Tyson's and what have you,
yeah.
That also...
as predictably as we can, I add that qualifier because a lot of times you get totally unplanned interruptions, such as a hurricane or an earthquake, these sorts of things where you get severe traffic jams that are not predictable and don't occur. And so not only are we trying to adjust the schedule to reflect what happens at least 80% of the time, but also improve the operation response to those interruptions. If the bus is stuck in traffic that doesn't happen every day, and it's up to 15 minutes, there's no way you can make that time up by driving fast. So, we're shitty. And so then operation tests solve that problem.
Now, does that mean when you would adjust, yeah, I was just thinking the same way, if then wind up cutting service, if it, well, instead of taking 90 minutes, it's gonna take now, you know, 120 or whatever, you know, after the half hour, so then you're not gonna be running, or you're gonna be running extra buses.
Well, in that case, with the 23, we're gonna peak, there's 15 buses assigned to that line in order to maintain 15-minute frequencies to rush hour. So instead of being 90 minutes, it'll be 100 minutes. That's enough of an extra run time that you will need another bus. So that's where we get the funding off the point of the routes that we cut, in order to shift that bus over to serve that line.
Okay, and then the other question is, are these changes, especially in the Tysons, and my concern is all the construction, I can understand having to respond to the construction constraints in that area, but hopefully sometime everything could go back to normal.
Yes.
You know, and then we will go back to, you know, reduce or what? My hope is that, you know, all these changes are because of the problems, and then this will solve the problem, you know, construction wise.
Well, I would encourage you to read the service evaluation study that's on metrobus-studies.com. We're just at the final conclusion of that study on the 23 line and trying to negotiate between Fairfax, Arlington, and Alexandria what we actually do with it. There are ideas to split it permanently. There are ideas to create a limited stop overlay. There's ideas to do a number of different things, and but there isn't really consensus on what that is. But we do know we've got an issue out there today that needs an immediate response. So without changing the basic structure of the line, we want to take this kind of response. And the work on the Beltway HOT lane. It's just killing every bus that goes outside the Beltway. So we've been seeing real degradation in on-time performance on the 1 line, the 2 line, the 29s, 28s. All of them that have to go through that construction zone have been impacted for the last couple of years. We hope for that that will end at some point tonight. And then I'll start another construction.
Just one quick comment. You mentioned there's a $4 million change, but the net change is zero. On the table, when you have the routes, the weight you have the change of 5 routes, and also the number of 6 hours that are affected, just any good information to have?
Well, we appreciate that. We wanted to emphasize that this is not budgetary, so by putting numbers in front of the council, they're charging us and taking everything to the nth degree. So, is that the recommendation?
And just the other comment that I have, or the question that I have was, so you mentioned that this is, you're doing this outside the budget cycle. So, is the intent to have a regular schedule of minor service adjustments outside the budget cycle on an annual basis?
It is staff's hope that the board will adopt that into regular practice, so that we will have presentation to the board in September and the ability to implement services in December before they get into the annual budget case. And the jurisdictional coordinating committee, who is the staff that supports the board, has also made that recommendation.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure, but we need to be prepared. I want to know if it's possible, and we talk about reducing bus services. In some areas, there are metal things available for people to ride up. And reduce the bus services, maybe there's a time to buy the open bus service for this, for some medical care, maybe soon you'll come to buy the open bus service for their own children, for medical care. Have you thought about that?
Yes, and not as part of this program, which is focused on the metro bus services, but if you go back and look at the budget presentation 2 years ago, we had identified a number of instances where jurisdictional bus services could be rerouted or extended in order to replace metro bus to allow us to reduce costs. That will likely be part of the dialogue for next year's budget, but for this plan, because this is focused on metro bus day-to-day operations, that was not part of the consideration.
Thanks for coming today and presenting this information to us. I just have a couple questions. I'm really glad to see some of the routes that I see that Texas and Woods have been working in DC.
I'm very glad of that.
Especially the YouTube route, the star service on the weekend. I can't wait to get on the email and tell people that something's coming. I guess my question to you though is that as I looked through the description, you know, I was able to go on and look at the routes online, but I was wondering, you know, it'd be really neat to have a baby brought in to do this. Can you actually show the public the before and after? Perhaps you can't print all of the before routes and the after routes as far as it will look like, but maybe if I go on the website and I click on the one of the pieces to see where it will go instead of having to figure it out in my mind.
The public hearing documents will have maps as part of that, and at the public hearings, like we did this last round, we'll have large table displays that will show each route adjustment so people can see specifically what they're acting to.
Okay, so if I remember correctly from the last hearing, I think you all had those documents out the day before, so people could actually, are people allowed to email you comments if they can't make the hearing, but they see us online?
Yeah, there's a email.
Written testimony at WMATA.com.
Thank you.
It'll be on all the public hearing notices, and it's maintained through the board secretary's office.
And then it's just as effective because they forward it,
maybe
read
everyone. Okay, because like I look at running time adjustments for the U5 and the U6, and that's a little bit of a chat. And you spoke about maybe about a white and or something.
Yeah, I think we're not changing the route, it just means we're adjusting the making the schedule reflect what the service is actually running.
Okay. And then one last question. I don't see NH1 on here. Am I correct? I guess what happens with NH1? I guess a relatively simple change compared to what I was asking
for.
I'm
going to
try to
have
you
with it. I'm going to have to write okay. Prince George's did not ask us to make the adjustments in the NH1 that we have talked about for the last 2.5 years yet. And we left it at that. We figured we were going to generate enough discussion with the highest voting structure that had a higher priority solving the D12-14 runtime issue. That we would let that dog lie until we got the
chicken. Oh, okay. I'll just kind of pick up from that point. Thanks for listening. I did have a question. And I have a serious concern with the lack of buses at Ranchette that go, you know, toward Allentown Road, etc. My son works at Bryanton, and sometimes he was very late. And mommy has to pick them up because we have no service after a certain hour. Basically, well, there's really very little service now from Branch to, you know, like going toward Allentown Road, Branch Avenue, going on that camp spring there. So I know the D12, 13, 14 basically run, but there's Suitland and Southern, from Suitland and Southern, and they're not really the safest metro stations. There. And I don't know if this is going to be any consideration, you know, if you're not going to have any H1 and H1 run back into that area. Have they considered any solution to, because that's a serious problem for a lot of young people, you know, we have Andrews Air Force Base. Most people go to British Avenue if they're going to, you know, travel and metro, et cetera, whatever. But, you know, my life is public transportation, so if I go out of town or whatever, come home, I didn't have to spend $13 or $14 for care simply because there are no buses that go into Camp Springfield. You know, has there been any consideration to either changing a route or adding a bus route from Branch, you know, to go into the Camp Springfield area?
Specifically, no, not as part of this exercise. The NH1 was relocated by George's request to Branch Avenue because of the perceived safety of the area and the station. But it does not connect really to anything that's part of the Metrobus network. And ironically, the county has started a shuttle from Southern Avenue, where the NH1 originally began, running to National Harbor and the Gaylord to provide connections to folks at the late night shifts, because trains end earlier at Branch Avenue and service ends at Branch Avenue earlier, and folks weren't able to connect to it. So, we think that that should be reversed in order. Now, the county has been doing a lot of transit planning with Park and Planning Commission, and has a number of recommendations in their 5-year transit operations plan. And so, as part of the budget discussions for next year, certainly that would be appropriate to make requests for extensions or reroutes or new services. And have that be a discussion of priorities with the county, who manages land use and transportation, and the state funds metro services in Maryland.
Thank you. Okay. I'd like to talk about a little bit of the elimination. Many people are not computer literate. When you do the eliminations, like say the L2 or L4 or 42 or whatever, will it be on the signs, or will you put them like in the express or the examiner? Because everybody is not computer literate, everyone doesn't have a BlackBerry or whatever, you know, so, because I hear that a lot, you know, even people who have, you know, the advanced phones and everything, they said, well, you know, they didn't tell us they were going to eliminate it. So, is there another way that's not going to be very costly to notify people that the L4 is going to be eliminated?
Well, yes, as part of the public hearing advertisement, there's ads in the newspaper, there will be posters on the buses, and we can even go so far as to put notices at bus stops, key bus stops. Certainly encourage folks to check the Metro website when they have access to it, Metro now has social media managers, so we have an active Twitter, I'm of the wrong generation, I guess I didn't just tell me what Metro says, Facebook accounts, and certainly are relying on the blog community to continue to inform folks and get the word out. And as you know, what works best with Metrobus riders is word of mouth. So if we can get a few key people like yourself to mention it and start people talking, and then cascades, and that's the really most effective way.
In Montgomery County, you know, or now, is the Defense Department as far as making any many of y'all will either to Metro or to Ryan, perhaps even to the bus?
No, they're not. The only Defense Department money being invested in transit services for the Washington headquarters district, the folks who control money. Everybody else is sent to the or have the jurisdiction to pay for the service.
So what they're doing in the Mark Center is
it is absolutely unique. It's the way it should be. And because of the high profile, high politics of that site, they ended up investing in Metro bus service and Dash service, running their own shuttle buses, and really providing a service network that has a high likelihood of success. At Fort Belvoir, it was a game of chicken until the 11 and a half hour of who's going to pay, and Fairfax County decided they simply could not in good conscience let that bracket happen without doing something about bus service. And so they agreed to fund some additional rec service, and I think it was on Tuesday they started a new route, a connector route, and from Franconia to Fort Belvoir. Similarly, Arlington stepped up and doubled the frequency of service on the 22A and to serve Arlington Mall. The Andrews Air Force Base has an extension of the K-12 that Prince George's and Maryland agreed to. And up at the medical center, there really wasn't an impact on bus service that could be identified. Most of the additional folks were anticipated to come by rail, and so we're monitoring what happens to see if there are any particular trips that overload that we need to respond to as part of the formal process there.
Thank you, and I just want to make a compliment. I've had a couple of occasions recently to travel by bus from Silver Spring to National Park and Bridge 71 and the express bus, and then coming along, fewer loading problems on major observation. But the special has also drives
yeah,
you're running the Arctic on Georgia Avenue.
When our drivers do something wrong, they certainly get the exposure, but not when they do it right, and they do it right so many times a day, particularly on a line like that. And we're real excited by the new adjustments coming due in September 25th changes, where we're able to restructure the 70 line, so that you've got the 70 and the 74, the new route south, that will improve connections ballpark and all of the cultural connections, and we're really excited by the opportunity.
I also bring the Arctic from the hospital to Silver Spring, and that is not an easy drive, especially at night, and I'm very impressed by people doing that. Thank you.
Well, we're studying that one right at the moment, and look forward to some progressive recommendations. Keep up with Montgomery County's tradition.
I was just wondering if you're, I imagine you're working closely with Christian Kent and folks that have worked closely with Metro Access to see if there's any unintended consequences on traffic on calls of Metro Access. If there's segments of routes are changing and if you can sort of approve certain areas, get to myself that there's a lot of seniors.
Well, we did, as part of our evaluation, ensure that we weren't intentionally making any changes that would cause an increase in Metro Access riding. And because most of these are adjustments in frequency, not location or existence, then the impact is very negligible. so we do not anticipate any sort of transfer of riders. Hopefully it'll be the other way around.
Unrelated question would be about getting on board and getting feedback from riders and routes that are changing, if the board approves these changes to go forward with public hearing. I know you said that there'd be advertisements, obviously, on the buses about those changes. Might there be an opportunity to really highlight that specific route change? And then also to have some comment cards, because there are folks that might take a moment while they're on the 20-minute bus ride to give comments, but might not be able to attend the hearing, or might not have access to the internet.
Well, I can make that recommendation to the folks that do our outreach efforts. It's really difficult to focus on a particular route because the bus is moving between different routes throughout the day. So what we'll do is have a generic brochure that tells about all of the changes, and so no matter what bus you're on, you're able to get that information.
Well, I'm from Greenbelt, and I wasn't involved in the Greenbelt restructure discussion. I know you made yourself very available, and I appreciate that. But one of the things I did listen in on listservs to some of that discussion, and one of the issues that came up that I thought was relevant here was the idea of replication. And that replication is sometimes geographic, but sometimes it's often geographic, meaning replicating the same space, but that sometimes it has time benefits. That if you have two routes that are doing the same space, you're really having shorter headways. So I'm wondering if eliminating routes for replication have taken into account what that does with headways in those spaces. And also, if you're lengthening headways, is there a minimum? Would there be one bus an hour? Is there some minimum that you hold to on headways?
There are minimums. They vary by jurisdiction. Prince George's is a minimum hour. Montgomery is a minimum half hour frequencies. Virginia, it's different. I don't know any specific policy in the district. Generally, they're driven by loads. You just need more buses than hourly because of the number of riders. And in answer to your question about the replication of redundancy, yeah, that's part of the consideration. The D6, for example, operates in conjunction with the D3 on the east end and with the D5 on the west end. And so we certainly coordinate the schedules to make sure that we're taking full advantage of having several buses passing so people can have shorter wait times and be able to get to where they're going more conveniently. Begin tracking the ridership changes and see if they're moving up or down, trending, and provide specific information. We do not do a specific Metro Access from that geographic area, but I certainly could work with Metro Access to do an assessment just to see if if they're seeing a spike or any needing to change. Something certainly we want to do. Well, it'd be good just to be able to have the numbers to show that there was a change.
We have a few more minutes. If there are any other questions, is Deborah have a question?
We have only one thing to talk about. Can we be able to do the upgrade?
I'm sorry,
We only have one interpreter.
Okay, well, we can take that out of it to answer this next, this last question. Okay, Sharon.
I'm looking at the on-time performance. This is just my bad calculation. The poorest on-time performance is due to the new district. My highest is in Virginia, but I'm looking at the 28A Lee Burke Pike, and I know that that's a very congested area, and I'm very surprised to see that their on-time performance is 82%, yet in Prince George's County, by the 12, 13, 14, and there's no construction anywhere in that area, is only 77%, and overall looks like it's about 75%. I don't know all of the other areas specifically, but it appears to me, and maybe some of them are in construction zones, but why is there such a vast difference in on-time performance between Virginia and Maryland, those two areas?
Well, you're right. In general, the district on-time performance for there's more things going on, more interruptions. I'm going to take full credit for the performance of the 28ANX because we redid that schedule specifically to improve its performance 2 years ago. And one of the innovations is at 7 corners, the bus arrives and it has a 5-minute window before it departs. So it can be up to 4 minutes late and still leave on time. That way we're remaining late, getting toward the end of the first half of the line, but we'll be on time starting the second half of the line. That's the sort of thing that we're trying to implement with other very long lines, and that's why we would like to achieve at least that level of performance. If you look at the rest of that section of Prince George's, it averages, I think, around 80% except the D. 12 is down sometimes below 7, so that's why we identified it as one of the priorities.
So you can adjust the, you know, the arrival time and the departure time to get it close to our time performance.
Right. Yeah, like the D12, you can watch it at 6 a.m., comes out of the garage and it's on time. It's about 90% on time by 6 in the morning. It's 80% at the end of morning rush, 70% after lunch, and it drops into the 60s by the time the afternoon rush hour ends. And that just is an indication that the bus doesn't make the circle fast enough, and it gets later and later and later. And so the way that we're able to resolve it is when a bus comes out to do a lunch relief, instead of waiting for the bus to come in and then it's leaving, we'll bring in a separate bus so it can leave on time, and the guy coming in from lunch can be as late as he needs to be, and it won't impact the next trip. And so those are part of the techniques that we use to improve the performance. In fact, we did that with the 5 o'clock trip. Brought a bus out of the garage just to run that trip because it was routinely 20 minutes late before the bus got in.
Is there a quick one, Chris? Do you want to get the interpreter quick? And we also want to thank the Stanley Company who's already stayed over the way that he was expecting to. We appreciate your presentation tonight and for considering our feedback. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll take a 5-minute break so that the Caterva and rest of the business. So we'll come back at 10 of 8. The rest of the agenda is not that heavy. The next item is the follow-up on the RAC procedures discussion that we had last month. The executive meeting went in past month, discussed some of the concerns and reflected on some of the concerns that were raised, and decided not to bring forth the procedure proposal again, that reflecting on some of the concerns that were raised and realizing that the procedure would only be used in such rare cases that we might as well just deal with those cases as they come up rather than create a layer of procedures. So that motion is moved at this point. So if there are no questions, we could move on from that. Governance committee and the executive committee were happy not to deliver the form. Okay, meetings with board members. John has been trying to herd the board members and herd us together to get us into some locations at times. John, do you want to say what's going on?
Okay, my boss has reached out to some of the board members, and the thought was to sort of arrange jurisdictional meetings with, RAC members from D.C., RAC members from Maryland, RAC members from Virginia. We have managed to sort of get, maybe not unanimity, but enough of the board members available from D.C. and the board members available from Maryland sort of all together at one time. Virginia's a little more patchworky, so I'm still working on it. And had looked at the idea of meeting, actually doing a breakfast meeting, since it wouldn't take up anyone's evening. Board members would be here for meetings later in the day, and everybody could sort of go on to work and go about their business, and it would be just sort of a nice, clean...
Weekday breakfast meeting?
Yes, like before work. The thought right now, we're looking at, and this is just tentative, and so I guess it depends. What I'd like to find out either tonight or within the next day or two is we're looking at 2 weeks from tomorrow, both for Maryland and DC folks. It would be like a Thursday morning from 8 to 8:45 here.
What's the date?
22nd? Yes. The board members will be here, so they would come in a little early. Y'all would come in, and then at 9 o'clock when their meeting starts, everyone would part ways. So
you're not together, right?
No, I mean we'd get two different rooms here.
So it would be what time of day?
Probably like 8 a.m. And I think what I'll ask is rather than belabor everyone's time right now doing RSVPs, send an email out this evening to at least the Maryland and the DC members and try and get some RSVPs, and then I'm still working on trying to find a date for folks in Virginia to get together. Some of the schedules didn't work for some of the Virginia members, so it's still out there. So that's what I've got.
Is that good for most people? For the Virginia and Maryland people?
D.C.
D.C. Let's do D.C. first. For the D.C. people, how many would be able to make that time?
What's the date again?
Thursday the 22nd.
The day after the
people are
safety. Right.
So, maybe bring a sleeping bag. What did you say?
That's also hard for me.
Oh,
there you go.
Okay, and how about parallel?
I will be out of town, so I'll be gone.
Okay, I think we did. There's two on here. It seems that there's a fair number of people to do. Okay.
I'm sorry, is Metro providing breakfast?
Yeah, we would get. We would, I mean, nothing fancy, but. No, I.
That was continued, because I was going to watch the topic.
That's what I was going to do.
Why is council recruiting?
Just to let you all know, also, we're coming up to that time of the year at which we beat the bushes for new RAC members, or some of you decide whether or not you want to be reappointed and apply as such. So there's a listing here of, this is a memo that we sent to the board the other week, and it's just a listing here of whose terms are up at the end of the year, if for some reason you don't know. And then on the second page is sort of a timeline of when things are, you know, deadlines and such. If you're listed as someone who needs to be, or someone whose term ends, I will get you, I'll be emailing you a form that you can fill out for the board to consider you to be reappointed if you so wish. I am very much looking forward tomorrow to meeting with someone from our civil rights department to try and get some ideas for outreach to communities that maybe aren't as readily easy to reach out to. And if you have any suggestions about things that I should be doing, I'd welcome them either now or via email. In terms of either how to get the word out, or you know, who I should be maybe reaching out to, or some of those things. So.
Okay. Thank you.
You know where to find me.
Are there a deadline for people who want to
It would be the same as the application deadline, October 9th.
Did we decide to reach out, because there is going to be outreach then to the general public for this cycle, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so after September 19th, is there going to be an announcement to the RAC saying, like, now that after the, you know, the outreach has begun, so we can conform groups that we may be aware of?
Yes. I mean, or I guess what I can say is you can assume that unless you hear differently,
okay.
But at the same time, the application form is always up on the website.
Right.
So if somebody applies, if they go home now and fill it out, it'll still be in the mix. So, but if in terms of actual, you know, the Metro will do a press release and that sort of stuff to sort of kick it off. So that'll also be a key.
John, do you want to just update everyone on what we talked about in the members that have been selected in the past?
We had talked about, and something that I think I'm going to start with for this upcoming meeting on the 21st, is when you apply, obviously most of the vast majority of folks that apply don't actually get selected to be on the RAC, but obviously they have great interest in all things transit. So taking their email addresses and such and just coming up with a list so that we can sort of more proactively invite them to meetings. Case in point, the meeting with MTPD on the 21st. And then, you know, once that list is set, do it for, you know, regular RAC meetings or committee meetings or whatnot. And if people, you know, if people say, hey, I applied, you didn't pick me, screw you, I'll take them off the list, essentially. But just another way to sort of reach out.
So, you know, sometimes we have community meetings. Some community meetings, we send the pack out to other members of the public who are interested. Sometimes there's only a few people at the committee, so a lot of people who are interested in their app and but have not talked to them, if they're interested in that one topic, want to come to a committee meeting, you know, and ask some questions and give some thoughts. You know, it won't overwhelm the committee meeting, you know, it won't get in the way of doing things. So it's like a good way to give people an opportunity. If it's that they don't want to, then that's fine. But if they do, that's going to be an opportunity for, you know, them to continue to be involved.
Thanks, we now have questions or comments on the RAC chair and the AAC chair report. We have the AAC chair report there, but Patrick is not here to answer any questions. You don't have a formal RAC chair report this month because the board did not meet in August, so we didn't prepare a formal report. And there wasn't an extra report on anyway, other than one item, which is the last page of your packet, which thanks to Kelsey, the RAC was invited to participate in a committee that the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments was putting together on complete transit communities and equitable transit-oriented development strategy. And you can read through here and learn about what that committee is, but you might have a very hard time. Because this is grant language. So instead of that, we've asked Joseph Kitchen to represent the RAC at these meetings, at this committee, and so we ask him to fill us in on kind of how the first meeting went and tell us a little more about what this committee is.
Okay, I actually raised my little fire here for I wanted to address something about the AAC report.
Oh, okay.
And then hang on.
Sure.
Okay. What I wanted to address next. The point of having been here, but maybe you can take this cam or not take this cam, is that on the weekends when we run the special trains because of the buses and everything like that, I've noticed downtown that a lot of them say special on them. And if you are a deaf passenger or you just have a disability, I was down there, this happened to me three times. I've been downstairs for there for the person who just cannot hear the train say Orange Line train. But the train says special, and so they don't know that that's their train. And so I don't know. I would hope that we can communicate somehow to Metro Central that the trains should always have some indication about where they're going. For people who can't hear the conductor say, "This is the Orange Line train." Like the last time this happened, it was like last weekend or the weekend before. So he was literally down there from the time I got off at the Park Common and went upstairs, and then came back 30 minutes later. Still down there. I'm very confused why the train's not coming. A little thing special. Okay? So that's my little AAC thing.
John, can you get that?
Yes, okay. I will. Let our rail folks know.
And then unless anyone else has other reports. Alright. So now I'll talk about the equity caucus. So last year, CAUGH, the Council of Governments, I was going to call the Coalition of Governments. The Council of Governments, CAUGH, applied for a grant through HUD. To basically help create this study, this 2050 study, about what our community, our region will look like in 50 years. So come up with a planning study for what the region will look like. And they applied for this grant and they didn't get the grant, mainly because they were told that they hadn't created a body that would actively reach out to people who wouldn't regularly be involved in planning decisions. So people like us who go to the meetings, they wanted Carl to come up with a plan or a body that would actively go out and reach out to people who would not regularly come to these meetings, who would not regularly be involved in the planning process. So Carl came up with this idea of an equity caucus, is what they're calling it, where they bring in different communities, stakeholders, as they call them, or ambassadors, different community groups, and the RAC is one of those groups. And it's a meeting of a lot of different people. So on one end of the spectrum, you have the Coalition for Smarter Growth, who, like, if it's a meeting about planning, they're there. And then you have the office, who they're not at planning meetings. And so you have that. Like, we have this wide spectrum of people who are engaged in planning on different issues, on different ranges, working together to come up with a public participation plan that would bring in other diverse opinions from people who would not be at a planning meeting to talk about issues of transportation, planning, and growth, and things like that. So that's what the meeting was that I went to last week. And the initial planning work Carl gave with this is that they put together this group in order to apply for this grant, which the grant is due next month. And so the group has just convened last week, and then they're convening Friday of this week, and probably again the following week, to come up with a specification plan of how they would involve what this group, if the grant is funded, how this group would help instruct Carl in bringing in voices from communities of people who are not readily participating in the planning process. And the part that I really liked about it is that, as I said before, they have people like Kisa Hall there. Kisa Hall, if you don't really know about what they do, they work with gang or crews in the city in D.C. and ex-gang members and getting them out of gang by helping squash like territory fights and things like that. They don't do planning. This is not what they do. But these kids ride our trains, and these kids, this is their community as well. And so bringing them in had to give the leeway into interacting with this other group of people who normally aren't a part of this thing, this group thing, as I call it, of who we are when we know these type of things. So bringing them involved. And then they also have other groups like Office of Maryland, which works with immigrant communities who don't really attend public hearings a lot because of how their feelings about participating in the government process when they might be undocumented and things like that. So that's what this whole meeting, that's what this whole process has been about. Carl has put this group together in order to add it as part of their whole region forward plan, similar to the Metro forward plan, in order to, except for they are really different, in order to apply for this grant, which they're going to apply for the grant at the end of the in October. And then Carl will, we will know whether or not the group will actually do the work that it's talked about doing if the grant is funded, and they will know if they got the grant in December. That, do we agree on that?
Okay. Any questions or comments?
I just want to say I now understand this so much better than I did from twice at our meeting, and I couldn't figure out what this thing was, and now I understand it.
Joseph, you say Friday of this week, is it during business day?
Yes. They're meeting on Friday at 11 to 2.
At Hunter and Capitol Street?
No, it's not at the Hall headquarters. It's at the
Washington Grantmakers Council?
Yeah, the Council of Washington Grantmakers
Association?
Yeah. It's up on
16th and oh.
Yeah. I forget exactly where it is, but it's downtown. It's downtown. It's 29 and 2.
And it's sort of a planning meeting. It's not, you know, obviously it's not one of these larger public participation meetings.
Right.
Sure.
Is it a public meeting?
It's not.
No.
It's a planning meeting. It's, they're going to, so what they're going to talk about on what we did at Jamba on Friday is the immediate steps of, like, how much money it will take to put together with, like, what other stakeholders who are not at the table should be at the table. For instance, last week I talked about maybe we need to involve some of the big church leaders, like the middle church leaders in Burnett. But church leaders also drive development. If you live in Prince George's County, they drive development. The big churches and things like that drive development. And so it's going to be identifying other stakeholders that are not involved in the discussion. We'll be talking about how this should, what type of funding level it needs to be at. So that's the cost of time for millions of dollars. But the grant stipulates that at least 20% of whatever they get must go to public participation. So like this is the federal government was saying, like, you need to put a lot of money in to bring people into the public. And so they're gonna talk about how much of this public participation grant needs to go into this equity issue and this caucus issue. And so this is like the really minutia of like what this group will do as opposed to what the grant will do.
That's what I was going to ask you, is how much is the grant? And in fact, you did say this grant is coming out of FUD.
Yeah.
That they would, you know.
I don't know how much the grant is. I don't think they know either.
Okay. Cool.
Well, thank you, Joseph, for presenting us and for Mr. Meanings, and we'll look forward to hearing more reserved reports. And again, I thank Kelsey Bradford for connecting us to Alicia Lewis at Todd. She's made the introduction and got us on board with this very worthy project. We now have time for open mic. Time to discuss anything that you would like to discuss. Questions? Dr. Griffin? Carol?
I have one thing, and I would like to have something on the agenda for a future meeting, talking about something that I think appeared for the first time today, or maybe 10 or 11 months ago, that the general manager is talking about hiring contractors to speed up the escalator, elevator repair schedule. And I had mixed feelings about that. On the one hand, as a consumer of elevators and escalators, I would like to see them completed sooner rather than later. On the other hand, as a resident of the district, which has a high unemployment rate in certain areas, I would really like to see Metro as a good employer have job training programs that would be available to residents, not only in the district, but in the large area. So I'd like to have some conversation about that at some later point in time.
Have we had Jim? Did Jim Bowen speak? The public safety. John, what's his name?
Our chief safety officer, Jim Rory. I don't know that he's ever been here.
Okay, he does one of the announcements that are able to go through the metro. But I didn't have him speak up on
this today.
He's chief public safety officer.
Safety.
Oh, safety.
Yes.
He does like the
security
not crashing as opposed to people not committing
crimes.
Has he even been there a year, John?
He was appointed right after the.
It hasn't been quite. I mean, the accident's been 2 years now. It's probably been about a year that he's been here.
I mean, yeah, I didn't mean right after.
Oh, okay.
Else. So, Chris. A group I'm sometimes participating in, a member of the Action Committee for Transit, is having their 25th anniversary. I think it's a fundraiser that's going to be applied at home, and one of the officers, I guess, in Tacoma Park assured of being within 5 blocks of this one park participation and approximate to the Mega Branch Trail. I meant to bring and copy the invitation for folks to take it with them. I'll email it to John. You might be able to pass along to Osmer gets, it's happening within the next couple of weeks. Elsie, for sure.
Yeah, I think following up on your point about abundance, I have an important issue, and maybe a volunteer service issue, but I will perhaps look to this. Listening to Jim Hammer speak tonight, and some of the other folks from like the rail division, I guess sometimes they talk about communication, they're kind of removed from the town's vision, so also maybe somebody for the communication section. I'm wondering if Metro could start, or maybe Metro about starting a pilot program whereby they need feedback on certain routes, like the U2 and P1, if they can send, you know, some of these students or people that, you know, are looking for a job, same way these individuals at Alta Express. If we have these individuals, you know, looking at major bus transfer points or rail stations, talk and gather information from people, and then get back to Metro, especially for those people that can't make it to a hearing, or, you know, maybe don't have email access. I'm just wondering if you can kind of help me and think outside of the box for Metro, and then maybe the pilot program for a lot of these things.
Can we just say students, Elsie, you mean like high school students, college?
Yeah, I think high school students. I don't know what the criteria is, but I think when I was in high school, we used to volunteer service for, yes, and so it needs to be supervised, but I mean, I'm thinking, you know, something like that should come from the people on the field.
I was wondering if those topics maybe would be a good community meeting to get some people from Metro, and, you know, that matters, to delve more into, you know, what are options for more job training, more involving of students and so on, to help with outreach, to help with potentially other, you know, things to ask over there. I mean, just, you know, that seems like maybe I don't need a good more good venue for that, because there could be like a lot more meeting issue.
We need to extend to the places to cash down for the direct.
Yeah, you want me to ask one question, you know, too.
Sharon, John, and Joseph.
First, I'd like to commend the general manager for coming up with a plan to handle the MLK celebration, although it didn't take place. He's very proactive in starting the train earlier, you know, on that day, and, you know, he talked about having, you know, more police available, etc. But I do want to commend him for being proactive in that regard. My second concern, I guess, would be a signage or lack of signage issue, public safety issue at Long Park Plaza. And I think I mentioned this one before, but that's a major transfer station. And I take that when I'm, you know, leave Branch Avenue and we're going on a trip, and it's very, very difficult to, if you're carrying luggage and you go into the airport, you know, you have to switch trains, you have to go on the other side. And it's very hard to find the elevator. Well, this time I finally found the elevator, but when I came out of the elevator, there was some confusion. There's like a gate or something like that, and then the police officer stopped me and said, you can't come out of the gate. And, well, how do I get out? I'm trying to get on the other side. But I really do think that, and I don't know how many more stations are very similar to that, where you actually have to go on the opposite side to go to the airport, to take the green, and then you need to take the yellow to the airport. And they really need to have some directional signs for individuals, because the first time I did it, I kind of bumped my bag up the stairs to go on the other side. So listen, I'm not doing that anymore. But it's a simple thing, and I really would like to see somebody put signs up leading those passengers who do have to make that switch to the elevators, and then, you know, how do you get out of the gate? How do you get on the other side without being stopped by the police at that particular station? So as I said, I'm just referring to Long Park Plaza. There may be other stations that are similar, but they need to do something about that, because this could be a very dangerous situation for seniors and individuals who are handicapped.
Yeah. Did you
want to
make a
question?
Yeah, I was just
going to
say, to the escalator before I can know which direction I'm going. Like, I have a sense direction now because I've seen some on those trains frequently, but if I don't, I always get upset, like, why do I have to go all the way to the escalator to look at this sign? And depending on which side I look at, is depending on which way I need to go. So I think maybe a cracker or something in the middle of the platform for.
When this one starts, do you feel like we're in a real life puzzle?
Yeah, like the mouse with the cheese and everything.
And elevators all the way up the end of the platform, you go across, it's kind of spooky to get it.
If I could just touch briefly on the issue of the elevator and escalator repairs, having followed this issue for a while, I think part of the problem is that the room that represents those mechanicals, represents other mechanics at Metro, and the wage that, that they're paying is below market, which right now is not a big issue.
The wage that is paying.
The wage that Metro is paying out. Which is not that big of an issue right now, because we're in a construction downturn, but the economy comes back. What Metro finds is if they are a training ground for elevators, they can manage for private companies and seal them. Amtrak has the same problem with electricians on the roof before, or they can train ground for the utilities and other private contractors. So that's not an issue that's going to be easy to overcome. It's basically the union's position is everyone gets it, every mechanic gets it, increase, and Metro obviously only wants to pay those employees that are underpaid to market higher wage. So I don't think that will go away. I also want to comment just really briefly on the signage issue, because I think that's more of a conceptual issue. The stations were designed by Charles Mises to be very Spartan and be part of the ridership experience, and Metro has already added signs. I think they are obviously compliant with the ADA. At some point, you add so many signs that you begin to track from the intent of the original architect's vision, and there was some, you know, controversy with it. But one issue I wanted to bring up was the one that Jim alluded to, which is in the Metro long-term plan, there's no money for expansion of either bus or road capacity. In other words, there's no money to buy additional buses, build new bus garages to store them, and the same on the rail side, to buy any more cars beyond what's budget for the Dallas Silver Line and the cars that they already ordered. And I think there will be long-term implications for that. And at a green level, I think we're going to be able to explore just what the impacts would be, which Metro is reluctant to discuss. So I live in the same building as Jim, and I've discussed it with him. And that would mean that they would likely have to, you know, try and get some money for initial bus garage, but even then, they wouldn't have money to buy new buses, so they would just keep their buses longer than they do, and they already keep their buses 2 years longer than the industry average. So I really think that over the long term, especially if we come out of the recovery and ridership increases, the fact that Metro doesn't have capital dollars to spend is something that the RAC should look at over the long term. And since I call that red, maybe the last 2 meetings, I don't know if it has been discussed, but I just wanted to bring it up.
Thanks. Joseph Stevens, and then Carol. And I think that might be
real.
We have that
6 minutes. Okay, so I'll be really, really good. But I actually just have a question, but I wanted to tell Sharon that I use the Flip Flop Club a lot. I think that you need to go BAM over it. I think you need to go BAM at that metro station, under, and then up on the other side. As opposed to, there's an elevator right there to go BAM, and you can just go under, and then you can go up on the other side as opposed to up and out. It's ridiculous, I know it makes no sense, but that's what a lot of people, I use it every day. Then the other, well, I don't use the elevator every day, but I use the station every day. The other question that I had, though, for John, or maybe Frankie can probably answer, but does Metro have, like, a community engagement person? Like, do they, other than the press office, do they have people who do community engagement? Because I think that press is different from community engagement.
We have an Office of Community Relations.
What is that?
yeah, that was my, I mean, I used to be in the Office of Community Relations. Metro has what's called an Office of Community Relations.
Can we have the press person come, right?
Yes.
About, like, their new press strategy and Twitter and Facebook and all that they're doing. So can we have with them and talk to them about how they engage the community and everything like that?
I think they can.
They used to come out.
They came to the bus subcommittee and I was very underwhelmed. She was a male, it was a female. No, I would like for them to come back and speak to the entire rec. Because I was, that was one meeting I left, I was really, really upset. I thought that, anyway, I was just very upset.
Okay.
That's the group, we did have him come to the bus subcommittee.
Okay, if that's, if it, well, if it's who it is, I don't think he's with Metro anymore, so I will. I will let the chair put that under consideration.
Hey, Stephen, hey, Carol. Honestly, one other point on the escalators. I mean, if they do speed up the repair, I, those statistics we saw last month were a joke. They're just, I go to the Pentagon every day. I've counted, there are 10 escalators in the station. At least 5 are out. If lucky, it's 6 are working, including the one leading up to where everyone gets off the train, and the one that is never working, so there's a giant mob scene that takes about 5 minutes to clear because it's a major transit station. And, I mean, if you get statistics can lie, and statistics that show the overall system are not telling about the important stations where people are actually using, and they need to do a much better job of just being aware or getting these repairs done, because it's been months and I haven't seen the main escalator that brings people out does for the platform does not work.
I'm coming to be very new. This is about the Brooklyn Catholic University station. And I'm really doing this, I'm going to follow up with Patrick Sheen, but I want to have his recommendation for that. The Brooklyn Catholic University station has 2 entrances. The entrance is closest to the Catholic University side. I experienced something that was really disgraceful. A person in a wheelchair who had evidently gone to the accessible entrance of the Brooklyn station when she was, leaving, didn't realize coming back that the other side, which was closest to Catholic University, was not accessible. So here she was in a wheelchair at the top of the stairs. There's no elevator on that side. The only way, there's no button to push to contact the manager. I have bad knees, so I could not do what I, I would have had to walk for 30 minutes to get around to the other end. The escalator wasn't running. So, or is there even an escalator on that side? I think there is. There is. So, what ended up happening is, fortunately, whatever she had her confined to a wheelchair, she was able to grab onto the bars and sort of inch down the stairs. Somebody with her took a wheelchair. It was really, I really all just felt very embarrassed and ashamed because this was a tourist. And you know, Catholic University in the government has a lot of people who stay in there going to the government. So at a minimum, they should have a call button or something so that the elephant, you know, the kiosk manager was Sunday afternoon, so when I finally got over there, the kiosk manager did not know because they were substitute. But at least should be in any situation like that, a call button so that the manager could activate the escalator, because I saw no sign that the escalator wasn't. It's just that I think they turned that escalator off a lot because they figured the young Catholic University students who run up and down the stairs on that side. I just want to put that on the record for a minute. So that was just really disgraceful.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to add there are a lot of terrific ideas for things that we should talk about. One thing when we all talk about what to do with our presentations, I know that now that there are always many more things, you know, just things other people aren't part of the conversation before that we have about like what goes in the meeting. There are usually a lot more things that can be covered than there is time to cover them. And so hopefully we have a lot of those discussions. I do want to just stand by what I've seen before, encourage people to sort of take on some of these through committees or through just the information requests that we can make and so forth to try to sort of delve into some of these issues. Like as not as individual recommenders acting individually, but acting on behalf of the RACOC, we can try to work with staff members on some of the issues, even if we can't get a presentation necessarily to the RAC. we can ask them to answer some questions, or for John to answer more questions in order to get a better understanding of things. Maybe that can lead to a letter that we send from the RAC as a full group, as from the full RAC. So, it's always been sort of hope that in addition to the discussions that we have here, if individual members have areas of particular interest, they can kind of take them on, themselves or in small groups. And so I guess I just wanted to encourage everybody who suggested great topics to think about whether that's something that can be done in order to allow the RAC basically to do more than we do. We have the one presentation basically. We had one presentation and then just a couple of the last few minutes and still took the entire time. So, we'll have like three more presentations the whole rest of the year, I guess. And then in addition, can we do more than just those three things? And if we can, that'd be great, because I'd like for the RAC to be able to do as much as possible.
Thank you, David. I'll second that too. But one thing I've noticed over the last couple of months is we've had very few committee meetings, and in the spring we had a lot more. And our committee structure is flexible enough to allow for committees to emerge on a topic. rather than the things that are sent. So if there was a topic that you would like to explore further that may not be able to be, that it doesn't only have to come up at the monthly meeting, it can end up in the meeting. So I guess I can do this for you. It's now a little after 8:30, so I'm going to, if there are no objections, I'm going to hold the meeting.